With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Hello, it's Tuesday, the 3rd of September. I'm Jules Breach. He's Andy Brassel, and this is Jules and Andy on Football Ramble Daily.
Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's team has dropped 7 points already. A draw at Southampton follows defeat to Palace, means Manchester United's unconvincing start rumbles on.
Anybody with half a brain, with respect, looks at David Luiz and says, why do you want that in your dressing room as a centre-half when you've got a defensive unit that is not a unit?
Start with Manchester United, Andy, because their troubles continue, really. I think coming into the season, United fans probably had quite a bit of hope that things were going to start better than they have. But we're 4 weeks in, they've won just one match this season. In fact, they've only won one of their last nine games, and particularly their away record is just atrocious. They haven't won on the road since that brilliant win at PSG back in March. It's their worst run in quite a long time.
And I think it's funny that you mentioned the Paris Saint-Germain game, because I know it's not fashionable to say that they were a little bit lucky in that. Although they were lucky that PSG treated it like they just needed to turn up to win. And they were lucky that they had five shots and ended up with three goals as well.
They were fortunate, but that was kind of the moment that everyone felt like, this is the new United and they're going to kick on from here. And it just hasn't really materialised since then.
But wasn't it always narrative above substance? I mean, I tend to think under Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, who's very hard to dislike, it's all about the packaging, isn't it? Because, I mean, I remember when he'd just taken over, I was with my family up in Newcastle at Christmas and New Year. And I went to see them at Newcastle on 2nd of January. And, you know, it was proper first flush of Ole. People were loving it. And that's when Ole's At The Wheel was getting sung all the time. And they won 2-0. They were awful for most of that game. And it just got totally glossed over because, you know, the Solskjaer bandwagon was marching on and all the rest of it. And I think we've talked about this already so far this season, that we can all sometimes be a little bit guilty of taking the result and working backwards, using the answer to create the working, which is...
to create a question.
Yeah, which is not really the truth of how things happen. And I just feel that the results since, we didn't do that much wrong last season. I mean, given where they were, the fact that they were still in with the chance of getting in the Champions League with 3 weeks left of the season, I think you could argue was a triumph of sorts, even though it's a come down from what Manchester United and their fans are used to. I kind of feel that the results have levelled out to where we always were in terms of content. So in terms of, I don't feel they've plummeted or anything like that. I kind of feel like the standard has stayed pretty much the same. Now, there are other questions, of course. Should Manchester United, given especially what they contributed to the first 10, 15 years of the Premier League, should they be playing football like that, or should we be entitled to expect more from them? I mean, maybe Manchester United should be playing better, less reactive football. And I can't help but feel that if Jose Mourinho was still in charge, he would have got a lot more stick than Solskjaer, mainly because he's less likeable and people have a feeling of what he's about. Now, the feeling that people, especially, I guess, people who mainly watch the Premier League, the handle they have on Solskjaer is still based on him as a player. Because what happened with Cardiff can be written off as a blip. It can be written off as a really long time ago, and because Cardiff don't have the same profile as Manchester United, it's maybe not seen as in as great detail as it by fans at large as it is perhaps by Cardiff fans. But yeah, there are huge question marks over him, and I think they're right to be concerned.
I think it's sometimes unfair to do what I just did and kind of go back to that PSG game, considering it was last season. Sometimes it's a bit unfair and a little bit unrealistic to kind of go, oh, you haven't won away from home since then. When really,
it's a massive deal if you're Manchester United.
It is, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
But when you focus on just what's happened this season in the space of four game weeks, and we look at the time that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer has now been in charge, he's had the whole of this summer to work with this squad. And I think that the reason that United fans are getting restless is that there doesn't seem to be a lot of growth, other than the fact that they signed Maguire and Aaron Wan-Bissaka, who were two great signings that they needed to obviously bring in more defensive options to boost the squad and build the squad around.
Yeah.
However, I think the thing that the fans are getting restless and a bit irritated by is that they haven't brought in any midfield replacements. They haven't brought in anyone in that midfield, particularly now Sanchez going. Obviously, Lukaku's gone. They didn't really bring in a replacement for Lukaku either.
Ander Herrera
is out. Valencia's gone as well. Smalling's now left. Damian's left. There's been a lot of players leaving the club and not that much growth coming in. And I think it's got to a point now where I've got a few friends that are Manchester United fans that are saying that even if this was all we had to kind of deal with for the rest of the season, because obviously who knows, they might bring other players in January. If this is the squad that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer has to use and to kind of hopefully, you know, carry on throughout the season with and build around and be successful with, is he the right man for it? Some of my United supporting friends are saying they don't think that tactically he has that kind of skill to develop this team.
I think an interesting point in that, adding to that, is Lars Sivertsen, obviously a friend of Football Ramble Daily and appeared on the continent before, who has spent a lot of the last years of his life on Solskjaer watch, not entirely voluntarily. I think he's expressed, certainly when Solskjaer got the United job, it's quite a bit of surprise in in Norway about it.
It's the biggest thing out there, isn't it? There's Norwegian TV who do all of the Champions League games. And whenever I'm pitch side, I see them. They're such a nice bunch of people. But the presenter who works for them was saying to me, this is the hugest thing that's ever happened in Norway. Like, it's so big. She said, we are now going absolutely everywhere that Manchester United go, because this is the biggest thing that's happened to Norwegian football.
I mean, it felt like it kind of happened by default. That's not to say he was a bad interim choice. That's not to say he shouldn't have taken the opportunity. Of course he should have. But when you've gone through the failings, certainly in terms of recruitment, that's something we can't lay on him. And that's a problem. I think the most likely scenario, when they get to the situation eventually, when they decide to change, and whether that will be in the middle of this season or at the end of this season, but I feel it will be one of the two. I think he'll be more than entitled to sit back and think, I could have done with some support there. But what they don't have in football management structure, that's the problem, really. You know, who really is in charge of buying the players? Where is the expertise in charge of buying the players? And you look at the people who've been linked, by and large, the vast majority of candidates that have been linked to United as a sporting director or some such, you think, what actually do they offer? Where's the speciality? Where's the extra bit of know-how? And, you know, with fully accepting like the contribution that Mike Phelan has made as a player, as a coach at various points, making someone like him the sporting director, and of course that's not happened, but is something that's been mooted as a possibility. What does that actually offer? Apart from saying, being able to say we've got a sporting director, I don't think it gets any closer to figuring out their problems. So I think when he does get to the end at some point, I don't think in the not that distant future, he will get to the end. Solskjaer will look around and think, you know, I really could have done with a hand.
It'll be really interesting to kind of get inside Solskjaer's mind and what he was feeling at the time that he got offered the job permanently. Because I remember a few months ago when it happened, there was so much in the media about, you have to give Solskjaer the job now. Look what he's done. Look how he's turned United's season around. Look at the run we've been on since he's taken over.
When really there was no rush.
There was no rush at all. And it was such a knee-jerk reaction to the short-term results that he picked up. When really, I know Paul Ince was absolutely hammered for it at the time, but he said, I could have gone in and done that. I could have turned it around. They needed someone to kind of boost morale at the club. Ole was obviously the perfect person for that. He proved that.
They just needed the break with Mourinho rather than needing Solskjaer specifically, you mean?
I think so. And I think that now that it's got to this point where we're a few months ahead of that, United fans are starting to worry that this isn't the right decision. Maybe they already knew that, but I know a lot of my friends were kind of quite happy really to come into the season with Solskjaer as the boss, because by the time you've appointed him back in, when was it? April sort of time, that, you know, it's got to a point now where he's had his time. He's had that time to kind of bring in players, obviously with Manchester United at the helm of it all, but it's got to a point now where I feel like they're getting a bit worried about how much he can do with this current squad.
Yeah, and I think they're right to. And I think one of the most concerning things, and you know, we talked about him last week, and it's clear that he's a player with not just enormous potential, but a lot of ability to change things in the short term. I think the fact that Dan James has been maybe their most outstanding player so far, and certainly their most eye-catching player so far, that's a concern, isn't it? That a 21-year-old comes in from a championship side, and clearly he's got enormous ability and could develop into a really, really good Premier League player. But to have him leading from the front, when you look at the other players that are there, that reflects quite badly on the current squad. I don't think there's any doubt about that. I think as well, you know, you think of the international break as a time to, you know, recharge, reassess, certainly from the management perspective, because you know, you don't really have time to get on the training field and do everything with everyone going off to internationals. Look at the match they've got up next. They've got Leicester at Old Trafford. If I was, you know, aiming to put a bet on that sort of game, which isn't really my cup of tea, if I had to predict a winner, basically, I don't think I'd pick Manchester United. I look at Leicester at the moment and think they look a lot more equipped for this Premier League season than United do.
I completely agree with you. I think Leicester have started the season really well and look very assured. They very much have... Brendan Rodgers has clearly a philosophy and a style that he wants to play with, and the players obviously agree with that and they completely back him, and you can see the confidence on the pitch when Leicester play.
But given that, what happens if, as we have just both said, that we think has got a fair possibility of happening, if Leicester go there in just under 2 weeks and win, what next?
I don't think anything will change, personally. I don't think that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer will get sacked. Do you?
Well,
not that soon.
It's unlikely, but it puts an enormous amount of pressure on the club to do something, to figure something out. And what do you do when you're outside of a transfer window? I mean, you know, they can't make a signing to placate the team. How can they really help Solskjaer now until January?
The trouble is, as well, is when you've got injuries to players, and particularly Martial, who stepped into that void when Lukaku left and seemed to be actually, I thought he adapted to that role quite well in the games that we've seen him. As soon as he got picked up that injury last week, heading into the weekend, even though it was at Southampton, United fans are instantly worried because they know that looking at their bench,
stretched.
They've got Rashford or Mason Greenwood. And Greenwood hasn't started a game for United in the league. He's a young lad. He's not proven yet. That's a worrying place to be as a team who should be finishing in the top six every season, should be finishing in the top four, really, if you look at them historically.
Or higher.
Or higher, or winning the league. That's what the fans want. Yet they haven't got a striker as backup.
I tell you what, Mason Greenwood is one heck of a PR godsend, though. I think you look at that, and not just for Solskjaer, but for the club, because, you know, he's very promising, again, when he came on against Southampton at the weekend. And we've kind of seen this with Barcelona at the weekend and Ansu Fati, 16-year-old becoming the youngest ever goal scorer for Barcelona. A young player doing his stuff does cover a multitude of sins, doesn't it? And, you know, there may be all these fair reasons that we can give that Manchester United are not pulling in the right direction. Squad construction, lack of football management. Is the right guy in charge? What Solskjaer is very good at doing is harking back to United history. And he is as aware of anyone of the importance of having academy products in that team.
Well,
and that Greenwood does something. I mean, that does stir something in the fans, doesn't it? I'm not saying for a minute it blinds them to everything that's wrong, but it does create a certain sense of goodwill that gives you at least a degree of breathing space.
You want to have a foundation to build from. And the thing is, if we keep getting battered and chances and chances and chances, you know, there's loads of work to be done. We're on the right track. We're not conceding many chances. The concern isn't the amount of chances we're conceding. The concern is that they are very efficient when they score.
Well, we just spoke about Harry Maguire there. So from one defender to another, Andy, it's now time to have your little love session with David Luiz. That sounds dodgy, doesn't it? I'll let you into a bit of a secret, right? So every week when we have a little chat on WhatsApp about what we want to talk about on Tuesday's Ramble, we all chuck in a few ideas here and there of what we want to say. And this week, to quote Andy Brassel on WhatsApp, he said to me, "I bet you're looking forward to my passionate defence of David Luiz." And I responded, "I cannot wait." So Andy Brassel, take it away.
Well, he seems to have carried the can for a lot of Arsenal's shortcomings so far. Going back to his first start against Burnley, which, as you said, was only 3 games ago now. There's a lot wrong with Arsenal at the moment, just as there's a lot wrong with Manchester United. I have to say, I don't really know what people were expecting of of David Luiz. If you're expecting consistent defensive excellence, what player have you been watching for the past?
So,
like, you know, he's been part of the Premier League on and off for like a decade now. So what are people really expecting? I know what you're signing when you get David Luiz. You're getting personality, you're getting a leader, you're getting a dressing room presence.
You're getting awesome hair.
You are getting awesome hair, and they've got plenty of that, especially with Matteo Guendouzi having such a brilliant game against Spurs
at the
weekend. Absolutely. But, you know, we know he's not the most consistent of defenders. We know he can be an incredible defender on his day, as he was in the 2012 Champions League final for Chelsea, for example. But I think, you know, buying a dog and then complaining that it barks is a very, very weird approach.
You're comparing David Luiz to a dog.
Yeah, an attack dog, a war dog.
The thing is, I don't think you, Arsenal fans were expecting him to change their defence. When they signed David Luiz, I don't know a single Arsenal fan that kind of jumped for joy and thought, yeah, this is going to change our season. However, what he does bring to Arsenal is a bit of experience. And I think the reason it's been disappointing is because he has made a couple of mistakes that have led to goals, hasn't he? Quite obvious ones.
Yeah, but like I said, that's really a given. I think the most concerning thing for Arsenal fans, it seems to have negatively affected Socrates so far as well. He's looking flustered. He certainly looked flustered more than once against Tottenham. I have a lot of time for David Luiz. Ever since he first arrived in Europe with Benfica, he's someone who has been about personality and has been about taking risks. Of course, you can do that more easily in a context with Benfica, where, especially when he first joined, they were very, very dominant. In 2009, 2010, he had a terrific season, and you know, he could get away with stuff because they weren't often challenged. That's obviously different in the Premier League. He's clearly up to the physical side of it. And this guy is, if you're talking about what he's good at, which is leading from the front, he's an absolute warrior. I remember interviewing him in New York when he was with Paris Saint-Germain before the start of the season, and us talking extensively about the World Cup. This is after the 2014 World Cup. I think it must have been 2015, perhaps. And we also talked about his role in the 2012 Champions League final, when his calf was absolutely mullered and he went in the face of all medical advice to turn out in that Champions League final, and you know, gave one of the performances of his life as he helped Chelsea get there and win the European Cup from what was a really unpromising situation, especially earlier in that season. So that's why I'm such a fan. I think because it's not just about personality in the sense that he's a fun guy. He's something that will give everything for the team. And I think that's very important. And to me, that's the most promising bit from Arsenal's early season. Again, like Manchester United, no one realistic is expecting the perfect. But what you get with players like David Luiz and also Dani Ceballos as well, is you're getting players who, to me, are taking Arsenal back towards a better time of Arsenal, because they're players who are in your face. They're players who are not afraid to express themselves on the pitch and really get stuck in the thick of battle for the team. I think that's really important. Now, I think to look at players like Dani Ceballos last week, playing a couple of rogue passes against Liverpool, and it didn't really go that well for him in only his second game in the Premier League, and David Luiz for having lapses of concentration, you know when you get them that this stuff is going to happen. They're players who take risks in every sense. What they're bringing to Arsenal is a bit more of the spirit, a bit more of the attitude that they've really lacked, I think, in the last decade. That's something that's really been absent for them. But to call them up on stuff that you know is going to happen and stuff that they need to have teammates that are going to cover for them, that to me is just ridiculous. Why would you take that attitude?
In fairness, on all the positives you mentioned there, I thought the atmosphere at the Emirates yesterday sounded brilliant. Unfortunately, I wasn't there. I was watching it at home on TV, but it just sounded amazing. And to show that character, to come from 2-0 down against your biggest rivals in the Premier League, to come back, get a point out of the game, and really, by the end, should have won it, showed such great character. And the atmosphere in the Emirates, you know, for the past few seasons, there's been kind of rumblings, you know, the Emirates, it's not the same atmosphere as it used to be and all that kind of stuff. I thought yesterday was a great advert for football at the Emirates and the North London derby. It couldn't have been better, really, from a neutral's perspective watching it.
Yeah, I mean, I do wonder if Spurs and their terrific new stadium has made Arsenal fans think, all right, we need to up our game a little bit. And I would love to believe that's the case. I mean, you know, you've always had people making little jokes about Highbury, the library, and have said that the Emirates has never had any atmosphere. I would retort to that actually, especially under the lights, and people always talked about the old White Hart Lane under the lights, and quite rightly, it was a very special place. But Arsenal on a European night under the lights is actually pretty noisy. Now, if they can bring that more into the Premier League on a regular basis, that's something for the team. But I do get the impression that Arsenal fans have been ground down a bit in recent years. You know, they've just heard the same thing every year from the board, and you know, they've seen the same thing on the pitch every year from the players. And I think now they've got an opportunity. I think this year is their best opportunity to get back into the Champions League in a while. That fourth place is saying take me, and I think to show that they are not that far apart from Tottenham, not as far apart from Tottenham as a lot of people, including me actually, imagined at the start of the season, to show that they could stay with them, I think really that should give them confidence. I think you look at that game, I looked at that game and I thought, these aren't two teams of incredible quality. And I think a lot of people thought that, and a lot of people thought how far apart they are from Manchester City and Liverpool. That stuff does not need to matter to Arsenal fans this season. Okay, medium, long term, yes, of course it matters, because Arsenal fans want to see their team back up there and challenging for the title. But in terms of this year, in terms of qualifying for the Champions League, that doesn't have to matter. And if they can, as you say, make the Emirates a place that's hostile and difficult again, have a team that is not without fault, but get stuck in, that shows their willingness to atone for their mistakes when they make them, which Arsenal definitely did, and David Luiz definitely did when they played Tottenham at the weekend, then I think that puts them in a better place than they've been for the last couple of years.
David Luiz just going into the Arsenal squad instantly improves their defensive options. I don't think there's any doubt about that.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp.
How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the year in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
Jules and Andy on Football Ramble Daily. So you will be aware, obviously, with the title of the show and whatnot, and with Herbie and Jules and me being Andy, that you can email us, Jules and Andy at footballrambledaily.com. It's all perfectly logical, isn't it?
It is.
And we have to say thank you as well, because so many people have sent nice comments and a nice feedback about last week's episode, and about all the episodes, but especially about last week's one. The discussion we had on sexism and racism, particularly online, is something that got a lot of feedback. We've got so many emails. So thank you for those. Unfortunately, there are more relevant than ever in the light of what happened to Romelu Lukaku at Cagliari at the weekend. You can hear about that on yesterday's Ramble, and we'll also get an Italian perspective, the latest on that, from James Horncastle on Thursday's episode of On the Continent. We've also got one piece of correspondence here from Gareth Alton. I hope I'm pronouncing your name right, Gareth Alton.
Alton. I reckon. Alton. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's right. Anyway, he says, hi both. Loving the new show. Keep up the good work. Thank you.
Thanks,
very much.
Gareth.
Just wanted to see why Andy didn't think Everton were in the same zone as Chelsea, Leicester, Wolves, and especially Watford. I'm not sure I did say that. I felt pretty sure that...
You're definitely taking it back now, aren't you?
I've had criticism from Watford fans who didn't think I put them in the good bracket. But anyway, with a back line including an international goalkeeper, the best fullback pairing outside the top two in Digne and Coleman. And Coleman, actually, I think, will be replaced by Jibril Sidibe, who's coming from Monaco. He's very, very good when he gets fully fit. International centre-backs in Mina and Keane, a midfield containing Gomes, Sigurdsson, Delph, and an attack with Richarlison, Bernard and Kane. I genuinely think we're as well set as Leicester and Wolves moving into the season ahead. Our squad depth isn't bad either, with Sidibe, Baines, Gbamon, Davis, Iwobi, Calvert-Lewin, Walcott, whew, and Schneiderlin. Is there something you feel we're missing that is putting Watford ahead of us for the season ahead?
You've listed your entire squad there, Gareth.
I didn't say Watford were ahead of you. And even if I had, they would have been rampantly disproving me over the opening weeks of the season. When you look at the players on paper, absolutely no argument. I think the talent's there at Everton. I want to see it as a collective a little bit more. I don't think there's any reason that Everton can't push towards that spot. Absolutely. But I think in terms of collective, Leicester have been comfortably the best of those sides so far. I would fancy Everton to finish above Chelsea, Watford, certainly, maybe Wolves. Of course, they've still yet to get off the mark in terms of Premier League wins. So they're enduring a little bit of toughness at the moment. I'm sure the international break has come at quite a good time for them. But yeah, I do think the quality at Everton's absolutely beyond question. Having said that, I do think Marco Silva has to find a way to put it all together. I'm not sure he knows what his best 11 is yet.
Really? Is that because of what you've seen so far in terms of who he's deciding to start? Because he started Iwobi against Wolves on Sunday. And he started him in the cup midweek against Lincoln as well, didn't he? Finally, Moise Kean got his start in the league against Wolves on Sunday as well.
It was pretty good.
And he was very good. He was good value. And I think the fans have been kind of
crying out for him to start, haven't they? But are you saying that you don't know, you don't think he knows his best 11 because of the changes he's made and because he's waited so long to introduce them to as starters? Or is it...
I think there's so much to choose from.
Because the squad's so deep.
Yeah, and we're only a couple of games into the season as well. I don't think that's necessarily a criticism, but I think it's something he has to work out.
Like, it's quite a nice position to be in, though, that you've got the option.
Yeah, absolutely. But you know, I think there are questions over who's going to be the holder in midfield, which is such a key position as well. The big plus for them so far is Richarlison. Now, we know him and the coach get on great, and the coach really rates him. And I think the fact that Richarlison now is getting to the point where he's Brazil's number nine, I mean, that is an enormous boost for him. And to say out loud, actually, that Everton have Brazil's number nine, it's pretty special.
He was immense on Sunday, wasn't he?
He was.
He could have had a hat trick.
But we know he can be. We know he can be on his day, and he started Premier League seasons very well before. What we need to see from him is one whole complete season. And now, you know, when we were talking about this off air, Jules, you made the point that it's not entirely his fault. He's been moved about a bit.
Played out of position for quite a lot of last year, and he was kind of expected to play a role that he's maybe not comfortable with or wasn't used to. So it's been good to see him this season kind of where he should be.
Yes. Yes, it is. But we need to see that whole season for him to make me a true Richarlison believer rather than just a Richarlison liker. I think that's the next step for our relationship.
Do you feel that with Richarlison? Because I like him as a player, but I'm like you. I'm not fully... I don't love him.
Yeah,
I don't look at him and think, oh, I want him in my fantasy team. You know, he's not that player for me. I think it might be... Is there something there that kind of... I get a bit worried about Richarlison, whether he's going to make a rash tackle or get sent off. And I don't know where I'm getting that from, whether it's just...
By the stuff he's done before,
yeah,
probably.
I just feel like there's something in him that's got that part of... He can be one of those players, can't he? And I think that's why, for me, I'm not yet a lover as well.
Yeah, I think I could say that about Everton as a whole. There's plenty to like there.
I do love Luca Dina, though.
Don't we all?
He's just, what a player. Since he's come to the Premier League, he's taken it by storm. And I think he's one of the best fullbacks in the league.
I think the difficulty for him has been to find a place where he can get justified recognition for his talent, because there wasn't really a place for him at Paris Saint-Germain. He found what he wanted at Roma, but decided to twist rather than stick. Couldn't find a spot at Barcelona. And again, no shame getting into that team. And then when you look at him in a French international context, there's an absolute avalanche of left backs over there. So fighting your way to the front of that queue, well, good luck. You know, it's pretty tough. But that doesn't do down it, like what he's got as a player. And you know, I think he's found a niche there, and he's absolute quality, no doubt about it.
Sixth in the league, they've got a couple of nice fixtures coming up after the international break: away at Bournemouth, then at home to Sheffield United. I'm not saying those games are pushovers, but you look at those and you expect Everton to win both of those.
Yeah, it's a platform for something. And then after that, of course, they've got Manchester City visiting. And City don't really like going to Goodison Park, do they? So that will be a really interesting one. If they can win the two games in between and see themselves come into that in good fettle, we'll talk again after that, Gareth.
Yeah, we will.
Get in touch. Don't be a stranger.
Probably the signing of the season for Everton in Fabian Delph. If Arsenal had Fabian Delph playing the way he did yesterday for Everton.
You've got mail there.
I do. We've got such a lovely email from Hannah Lilly. Again, Andy, you mentioned a moment ago that we had so many lovely comments both to the email address and on Twitter and Instagram as well. So thanks once again for all of those, all based on last week's conversation that we had about sexism and racism on social media. And this one from Hannah has made me smile. She said, "I've been listening to the Football Ramble and On the Continent for a while now. And I have to say, my favourite part of the new Ramble Daily format is the Tuesday discussion show." She said, "I've really enjoyed the mixture of the topics you discuss, from the purely football to the societal issues around the game. It really is wonderful to listen to calm, friendly and informed people on these topics without people talking over each other. Are we calm and friendly, Andy?
I can't tell you how tempted I was to talk over you then.
She says, thank you so much. I was just listening to This Week and Jules talking about sexism on social media around football punditry, and it was all so well articulated. The prejudice surrounding the game needs intelligent and considered discussion. And she said also, I have to say, I've heard very little about sexism, even from BBC's Football Daily, and it's something that needs the spotlight on. Otherwise, it'll just go on and on. So well done. And she said, please keep up the good work, both of you. Love the chat and so glad this type of conversation has a platform. Thanks for that, Hannah.
Yeah, thanks, Hannah.
Yeah, we really enjoyed having that conversation. It's unfortunate we had to have that conversation, but we also agree that it's so important to have it, and not enough people are having the conversation about the sexism side of it. I agree with Hannah there.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's something we're both keen on to talk about women's participation in the sport. And obviously you'll be getting involved with the start of the WSL next week.
Cannot wait. I'm so excited.
I'm sure that'll come up next week. Which match are you going to?
So for BT Sport, it's obviously the international break. So instead of my usual duties on Score and early kickoff, I'm going to the Etihad.
They're letting you outside?
Yeah, they're letting me out on the pitch. Can you believe it? I won't cause carnage, but I will wear heels. So I'll probably get told off. I need to. I'm too small.
Groundsmen hate you.
Yeah, they do hate me. I got told off at the Women's World Cup for it, and apparently I got like well known for it. I was like, oh, this is so awkward. Everyone was talking about the girl that wore heels on the pitch in Le Havre.
If some leading sports company wants to provide you with boots, I mean, that's their lookout,
exactly,
isn't it?
Exactly. So yeah, I'm going to be at the Etihad. It's the first ever Manchester derby in the WSL after Manchester United got promoted last year to the top flight. So Man City against Man United. What a game to kick off the WSL. It's a little bit of a plug, but it'll be live on BT Sport 2:30, and I'm going to be joined by none other than the Lionesses manager Phil Neville, Karen Carney, who's just retired, and also Rachel Brown Finnis. So awesome guests. I'm
quite
sure
a lineup,
I'll have,
that.
Yeah, I have loads of good stories to tell you on next week's Ramble, so looking forward to it already.
This was a Stakhanov production.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember. Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.